from 90.9 WBUR. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston. Coming up, the latest on what is now officially the blizzard of Boston. Hundreds of thousands of people are without power throughout Massachusetts, and Governor Baker expects there will be more.
We expect to see that number increase, especially on the South Shore and the Cape. So please charge devices now and make sure you have batteries on hand for flashlights and other household items.
Also, state transportation officials are asking people to stay home.
It may be tempting if the snow tapers off to get back out on the roads, but we would encourage folks to continue to stay off the roads so that we can keep everybody safe.
And Nantucket's police chief says they haven't recovered from the last storm.
In some cases, the floodwaters have never receded since the last storm. So it's been rather challenging, but it's been, nothing we haven't been able to deal with.
We'll check in on how this storm is affecting the state next on Radio Boston.
Thanks for listening to the Radio Boston podcast. If you'd like to support WBUR, go to radioboston.org and click the pledge button in the upper right-hand corner. Okay, back to the show.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Well, it's officially a blizzard in some areas of Massachusetts. This storm's sustained high winds and reduced visibility have put it into the blizzard category. Most schools are closed. Officials say people should stay off the roads. The speed the entire length of the Mass Turnpike right now is down to 20 miles per hour. The storm has downed trees. It's knocked out power to almost 250,000 people across the state at last check. Several cities have declared snow emergencies, including Boston. Governor Charlie Baker says massive power outages in southeastern Massachusetts are a big concern, as some crews can't get out today to try to restore power.
Obviously, those crews are going to have to wait until the snow stops and the wind stops before they're going to be able to start doing the work required to put those outages back online.
The governor says those without heat should either stay with family and friends or call 211 to try to find a local warming shelter. WBUR's Bruce Gellerman was at the governor's press conference today, and he joins us in studio. Hi there, Bruce.
Let's talk about March Madness.
Ooh, I'll say. What was the main message from the governor?
Well, as you said, there's a blizzard out there. Snow's supposed to be tapering off at about 5 o'clock, but it could snow all the way through the night in some places. The governor said, when he spoke about 3 hours ago, there were 170,000 people without electricity. He said we could expect more, and sure enough, there are now about 240,000 households without power. The problem, Deb, is that the snow is really, really heavy and wet. It's bringing down, trees and power lines and all the rest. In the last 10 days, there were 750,000 households have lost electricity. He gave credit to utilities for bringing them back. Now there are almost 3,500 crews clearing state roads, but he says, really, the big hazard is downed trees and power lines.
Stay as far away from the downed lines as you can get. Many of them are live, and if you do know of one, do exactly what people have been doing, which is call the police station and let them know.
Yeah, and get out your batteries.
Mm-hmm. So what about transportation, Bruce? What if people do go out in this storm or have to go out?
Well, Massachusetts Department of Transportation Secretary Stephanie Pollack was at the news conference today, and she says that people should take public transportation if they're going to go out at all during the storm.
Great job for staying off the roads. Thank you for that. And please stay off the roads for the remainder of today. Use public transportation as needed and allow the plow drivers to get out there and clear the streets as this storm continues.
Now, we should say that the MBTA is operating on a very seriously curtailed schedule. They have reduced the service on the T, so they can give the T a chance to catch up so they can provide service during tomorrow's commute. Pollack took pride in the fact that the commuter rail is running, hasn't missed haven't canceled a single train, but they're very seriously delayed. They have put in $100 million to make the train's more resilient. Each and every one has a plow in front of it. Logan Airport has been staying open, but had no flights. 800 flights were canceled. There is one runway. It's only there for diverted planes that are coming from other airports. People are advised to check tomorrow to see what the airlines are going to be doing.
All right. WBUR's Bruce Gellerman. Bruce, thanks so much for being with us.
You bet.
Listeners, we want to hear from you. How are you handling this storm? Do you have power? Do you have to drive? And how does this storm compare to the other two nor'easters that we've had in the past 2 weeks? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. But first, we want to get the latest on the roads and different things happening around the state in terms of transportation. So we're joined by Highway Administrator Jonathan Gulliver. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
So it's my understanding the Mass Turnpike's a mess.
Yes, I think it's fair to say that many, not only the Mass Turnpike, but many of the connecting roadways, especially from Central Mass into Boston right now, they're in really difficult shape. Hmm. There was a really large band of snow that moved through, dropped a lot of snow on us in a very short period of time. We saw more than 3 inches drop in the past hour. And as a result of that, we have lowered the speed limit along with the state police to 20 miles per hour for much of the turnpike. And we are seeing a lot of spin outs and a number of tractor trailer jackknives as well. It's been a very, very difficult past hour.
I heard that Natick in particular, on the turnpike heading eastbound, right at Natick, there's a real problem.
That's the more recent one that we just saw with a tractor trailer jackknife. We've also had similar incidents in Auburn and also in Millbury, where we have seen a number of speed-related and weather-related crashes in the past hour. Again, it was a huge amount of snow that came through, and that whenever the snowfall rate gets above about 2 inches per hour, it's very difficult, if not impossible, for the snow plows to clear the roadway down a bare pavement and maintain speeds. Hmm. So that's really what we just saw.
Any roads closed?
We don't have any roads closed right now, although we have had the portion of the pike, a couple of lanes closed so that we could remove those tractor trailers. Those are opening up again right now, but we haven't had to have any wholesale closures yet. So right now the state police have been comfortable with speed reduction, and they're out there doing enforcement to try to make sure people are going safe speed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so when do you think it will be safe to travel?
So we're seeing that the storm is slowly moving out of here. The far western part of the state on the New York border right now, it looks like it's actually stopped snowing. I'm not sure if it's going to stay that way for the rest of the afternoon, but it certainly has slowed down there. Based on our forecast, we're expecting that we're in the heaviest part of it right now, and we expect that it's going to keep going for another couple of hours before it really starts letting up later on tonight, somewhere between 8 and 10 in the Boston area.
Hmm. Okay, so your advice to commuters would be what?
Our advice right now is to really stay off the roads if you don't have to venture out there. And if you do venture out there, really drive safe and slowly. It can be very treacherous depending on what roads you're on. And we're expecting that it's going to be difficult travel for the next hour or so.
All right. State Highway Administrator Jonathan Gulliver, thanks so much for taking the time out of what must be a very busy day for you and joining us on Radio Boston today.
All right. Thank you.
And also, southeastern Massachusetts is getting hard hit, as are many areas, by this storm. Plymouth could get up to 2 feet of snow by the end of today. With us on the line right now, Jonathan Beter. He's the Director of Public Works in Plymouth. Hi there, Jonathan.
Hey, good afternoon.
So what's happening there?
So we get about, I'd say, 6 to 12 inches. You know, Plymouth's pretty big, so we have, you know, the most snow in South Plymouth. The issue we're having is the trees and the power lines that are down. Mm-hmm. We have about 11,500 people without power at this time. Eversource will not respond, you know, when we have 35-mile-an-hour winds. Mm. So we have power lines and trees and roads that are actually blocking people in. So that's really the biggest issue in Plymouth right now. Snowfall, we've been able to keep up with that. But again, the roads are very unsafe to be traveling today, and it's just the power issues we're dealing with today.
11,500. How many is that in comparison to the entire population? Are we talking what percentage?
Yeah, that's probably about 30%.
30%. And then how does that compare to some of the other storms?
To the other storms, it's probably on track with Riley a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing, again, it's we're dealing with the snow this storm. Mm-hmm. You know, during Riley, we didn't have the snow, so the response is a little bit easier. And we don't expect the wind and the snowfall to end till 10 o'clock or midnight tonight.
Mm. And so we also heard reports of thunder snow.
Yeah, a few hours ago we had a little bit of thunder and lightning here in Plymouth, but I haven't heard anything in the past couple hours.
How are you trying to keep roads clear and to keep up with all these downed trees and everything?
We have all of our equipment out, and we have all our contractors in. Again, the only issue is the areas that do have the trees that have fallen down and the power issues that we have to stay away from.
Mm-hmm. Is there an anecdote you're hearing about this storm, Jonathan, that stands out in your mind, you find yourself repeating to a lot of folks when you're talking about
I just think the winter has been fascinating.
Fascinating. That's a good word.
For the coastal communities, you know, in New England, just what we've been dealing with the high tide cycles and the frequency of the storms, it's unique.
Unique and fascinating. You're very kind. Jonathan Beter, Director of Public Works in Plymouth, thanks so much for being with us.
Have a great day.
Okay. We want to check in now with one of our reporters who's been talking with some of those who are really vulnerable in this weather. WBUR's Simone Rios is at the Pine Street Inn in the South End, where he has talked with some people who are homeless and some of those who work with those who are homeless. Simone is on the line now. Hi, Simone.
Hello, Deb.
So what's the scene like there at the Pine Street Inn?
So there's a lot of people here. I've been here several times in the past, and I've never seen as many as there are right now. So normally the shelter is closed during the day and reopens as guests come to check in for the night. But because of the storm, they stayed open, and it's really packed. People lined up sleeping on the floor, watching TV, doing what they do at a shelter. I think actually a fight broke out a few minutes ago, but security stepped in pretty quickly, fortunately. Josh O'Brien is the shelter director for the men's shelter. He says dealing with increased demand is tough for everybody, but you know, they're trying to stay optimistic.
We try and always keep it focused on how we can move forward with moving out of homelessness, but today is a lot about just being together and having a big feeling of fellowship that we're all kind of in this together. We're all human. We're all subject to the storms.
We certainly are all subject to this storm. Simone, yep. Earlier today I'm told you were at South Station and you spoke with some folks there who are homeless and actually spent the night there. What did they tell you?
That's right. I met a man named Joe Edge. He spent last night inside South Station with a friend. He said he normally stays outside, even in this weather, but because of the high winds, he had to find a place to stay last night. He does not like staying at shelters, so he stayed in South Station, and they allowed him to stay there.
I have a tent, but I can't pop it in this kind of weather because, one, right now you get 60-mile-an-hour winds. That ain't going to cut it. You know, even if I stake it with cement, ain't going to happen.
Simone, you also visited St. Francis House, which is a homeless shelter that's downtown. What's happening there?
Yeah, so as you know, Deb, St. Francis House is a day shelter. So folks who spend the night at places like Pine Street Inn can head over there during the day. You know, today seems to be a more or less normal day, with the exception of the weather outside. A lot of people are coming through looking for clothing. David DiNapoli heads security and community services at St. Francis House. He says that so far, so good.
All of the night shelters have stayed open during the day, so people have the opportunity to stay in at the night shelters. Even having said that, many people still venture out, just cabin fever. They want to get out of the building they're in.
Simone, I'm just wondering, though, I know folks do probably want, you know, to get out of where they are, but this is an unusual storm. It's a daytime storm, right? So it's really hitting hard right now. What are folks telling you about what their big concerns are because of this storm?
You know, Deb, I think people in the homeless community, the indigent community, are used to dealing with difficult situations, weather included. It's tough being without a home and having to stay in the streets or in a shelter. And to tell you the truth, I think a lot of folks have dealt with a lot worse than this snowstorm.
And Simone, just in terms of conditions that you've experienced, what's it been like to travel between South Station and downtown where Francis House is?
Yeah, so fortunately, I'm all suited up. I have a big one-piece snowsuit that I haven't worn for like 15 years. I was able to get from where I live in Dorchester to South Station with no problems, I should say, on the Red Line. From South Station, I trudged through the blizzard to St. Francis House just a few blocks away, that was pretty miserable. Fortunately, I am, like my good colleague Shannon Dooling, wearing ski goggles, which I would recommend to anybody who has to go out in this weather. So from St. Francis House, I caught an Uber over to the Pine Street Inn. The driver said he was glad to have snow tires on his car, that without those, you wouldn't have been out driving right now.
All right. WBUR's Simone Rio, stay warm, stay safe, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Deb.
And, of course, one of the main weather questions right now is, so when is this storm going to be over? Well, for that, we're joined by Alan Dunham. He's a National Weather Service meteorologist. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Okay, big question. When is this going to end?
Well, not for a while yet. The storm is gradually moving further and further off to the east, northeast, or the outer water, but it is such a huge storm. It's going to take a while. We do have, the snow has lightened up in the greater Boston area. However, we do have an enhanced band of much heavier snow, really stretching from coastal New Hampshire back down through a lot of Middlesex County to just outside of Worcester down into Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have to wait till the storm pulls away and pulls that band of snow on through.
When you say a couple of hours, what are we talking about? 8 o'clock? We're talking 10 o'clock, 6 o'clock?
Oh, well, I think the heaviest snow should come to an end between 4 and 6. Mm-hmm. But then we're still going to have several hours of still light snow that we're going to have to put up with, but a lot less. The heaviest and steadiest accumulation should be coming to an end, like I say, 4 to 6. And then after that, maybe another inch or two after that point, on top of whatever you have by 6 o'clock.
What does it mean that this is officially a blizzard?
Okay, to be a blizzard, you have to meet certain requirements as far as visibility and wind speeds. Mm-hmm. And so we had several locations that have already gone ahead and met the qualifications for blizzard.
Mm-hmm.
Blizzard definition is falling or blowing snow, reducing visibility to below a quarter of a mile, along with sustained winds or winds that frequently gust to 35 miles per hour or more, and this has to be the predominant condition for a period of 3 consecutive hours.
Okay, so what areas, we can call it the blizzard of 2018,
yeah,
right?
We can, because Boston met the criteria. Martha's Vineyard met the criteria, Marshfield met the criteria, and Plymouth has met the criteria. Also Hyannis and actually Newport, Rhode Island. So we've had several locations that have already met the requirements. So this is officially, along the East Coast here, a blizzard.
Okay. What areas in Massachusetts were hardest hit?
It depends what your classification is. There's a snow classification, which is still occurring.
Hmm.
Then you have the results of the heavy snow and strong winds.
Okay, the most snowfall.
Power outages.
Most snowfall. Who got the most?
Okay, most snowfall right now so far. Let me bring that one up. There it is. All right. In Massachusetts, Essex did pretty good, but once again, Middlesex and did real well.
Middlesex County.
Yeah, Middlesex County.
Huh.
Norfolk County, over towards Walpole. So far.
Not southeastern Mass.
Oh, I haven't got there yet.
Okay.
Gotta have patience here.
Well, we're live, you know.
I know. Plymouth County. We've had let's see, at 125. We had 10 inches in Carver. 227, 16 and a half inches in Bridgewater.
Hmm. Okay.
Worcester County got really hammered, too.
Worcester did, too.
Yeah.
Wow. So we've got it all over the place. There's
a wide area of anywhere from basically 10 inches up to as much as 19.
Hmm. I want to ask you about something that we noticed, how the storm system looks on a photo. And we noticed that the National Weather Service actually put this on social media. There's a form of a heart, Alan. We have a photo on our website at radioboston.org. Right in the middle of the storm clouds, just off the coast, you see this formation of a heart in the middle.
I saw that earlier.
Oh, come on. What do you think?
I think that's just the way it formed up. You know, Mother Nature will sometimes, you know, make pretty little designs with its cloud pattern and these huge storms.
How about the weather for tomorrow? What are we looking at?
Oh, weather for tomorrow, looking better than what we've had today, by most certainly. But we're still going to be looking at some chance of snow showers and maybe some snow squalls. That would be late tonight into tomorrow morning, but overall, mostly cloudy, few peaks of sunshine tomorrow in greater Boston metro. Highs only in the upper 30s, though, and kind of a gusty southwest wind, so it's going to feel a lot colder than 30 degrees. And I'd love to say there's going to be a big warm-up to melt all this snow, but I just don't see it happening. The warmest day this week will be Thursday, but that's high temperatures only in the lower 40s, you know, 42, 43. And then Friday, highs in the 30s. Saturday, highs in the lower 30s. Sunday, we may get back up to the lower 40s again on Sunday, but then cooling off again on Monday. So with as much snow that's fallen, it's going to unfortunately stick around for a while because we'd have no big warm-up to melt it.
All right. National Weather Service meteorologist Alan Dunham, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston. Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. More than half of Massachusetts residents know someone who's addicted to opioids, and more than a quarter know someone who has died of an opioid overdose. Those are some of the findings from a new poll that was commissioned by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts. Joining us to talk about this is the insurer and a policy researcher. First, Andrew Dreyfus, CEO of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Good to be here.
Also, another Andrew Kolodny, who's co-director of opioid policy research at Brandeis University. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So, Andrew Dreyfus, let's start with you. This poll was done in January. About 600 Massachusetts adults were asked a series of questions, many of them concerning the opioid epidemic. And your survey found that 71% of the respondents said that the opioid epidemic was a very serious problem in Massachusetts. And second to that was healthcare, which was 58%. So that's a lot of people. Was that surprising to you, or how would you categorize that?
Yeah, it really was a stunning result. While I think we all knew that the opioid epidemic had gotten a lot of attention in the state, it obviously gets a lot of coverage in the media, I think we would not have guessed that it was both the most urgent public problem facing the Commonwealth, according to the people of the Commonwealth, and that would rank so much higher than other issues such as taxes, the economy, crime, healthcare. So that was a surprising finding. It also suggests that many people, and there are other questions which support this, many people in Massachusetts know someone who has had a substance use disorder, know someone who has been overdosed, and in many cases, unfortunately, know someone who has died from it.
I wonder if that was the most surprising takeaway for you in terms of 27% of the people saying that they knew someone who died of an overdose, and more than half of the people said they knew someone addicted to opioids. Those numbers seem shocking.
They are shocking, and I think they show how deep-rooted the problem is, the widespread prevalence of the problem in Massachusetts, that it affects people of all income levels, of all races, of all backgrounds. And it just shows how urgent a problem it is and how much work we have to do to try to solve it.
Andrew Kolodny, what's your takeaway from those numbers that 600 Massachusetts adults are polled and more than half of them know someone addicted?
It's disturbing but does not surprise me. We are in the midst of the worst drug addiction epidemic in United States history. So when I say that, I'm referring to the number of Americans who have become opioid addicted and to the overdose deaths that we're experiencing. And I think we will be paying a very high price for this problem for probably the rest of our lives. Perhaps the closest we've come in history might be the opium smoking epidemic in China, which was especially severe in the 19th century. And even compared to that epidemic, I believe what the United States is experiencing today is far worse, particularly in terms of deaths.
Right. Many of those in this survey felt that the opioid epidemic is more of a public health issue than a law enforcement issue. More people felt that it was a disease. But at the same time, more people in this survey felt that the biggest barrier to effectively dealing with this problem was a lack of personal responsibility on the person addicted. So a little bit of maybe inconsistencies there.
There is. I do think we're seeing a better understanding of addiction as a disease rather than a moral failing. We're seeing more of that today than we saw in the past, but we still have some room there for improvement. So people become opioid addicted by taking opioids repeatedly. And some people become opioid addicted because they were taking opioids repeatedly to enjoy the effect, or they were taking opioids repeatedly to self-medicate despair. But many people become opioid addicted taking opioids repeatedly because a doctor prescribed it to them. And so, you know, I think there are some people who played a role in the development of their addiction, but there are many people who became opioid addicted following a doctor's orders.
Hmm. Now, treatment, which has been talked about as a possible solution, obviously, could be able to help. It was also a question in this Blue Cross poll. And more than half of those surveyed rated the care and treatment available in Massachusetts as either poor or fair. Many, 43%, said that increasing treatment funding is the way to help stop this. Andrew Dreyfus, what do you, as a major health insurer in Massachusetts, take away from those numbers about treatment?
Well, I think there's no question that we need to expand and diversify our treatment options for people who have addiction problems. And we've been doing that here at Blue Cross. We've been expanding treatment options. We've been ensuring that there aren't any barriers such as pre-authorization requirements, whether it's for methadone or other forms of what we call medication-assisted treatment. We need more treatment beds. We need more outpatient programs. And we're starting to look at alternatives such as recovery coaches using often people who have recovered from addiction themselves, work with newly addicted members who need that kind of support. So we need more treatment, and we're willing to fund it.
Hmm. What about the quality question here? Because most recently we've heard a little bit about quality of treatment. We heard from the National Association of Treatment Providers that they are working on trying to set guidelines of how someone can judge quality. Of course, we heard from State Attorney General Maura Healey, who is warning people about potential scams where unethical so-called treatment providers are telling people they're going to give them insurance and they're not really giving them treatment. And I guess the question for folks, how is it that people are allowed to scam the system and there don't appear to be sort of the same standards of quality for care as there are for other chronic diseases? Andrew Dreyfus?
Yeah, that has been a problem, especially in some out-of-state programs where unsuspecting families are duped into sending a family member to a program which is not of good quality and sometimes actually even makes their addiction problems worse. We encourage all of our members to call us. We have a registry of highly qualified programs in the state. We monitor them carefully. If there are quality questions, we either suspend admissions to those programs. So it is a problem, and the treatment community on this issue is still relatively young and improving, and we need to kind of fortify the existing treatment programs, especially those here in Massachusetts. Hmm.
Andrew Kolodny, I wonder how you would describe either access to treatment or quality of treatment as affecting or contributing to this epidemic. And are these steps that Andrew Dreyfus just mentioned of expanding and diversifying treatment, are those ways that will really help significantly deal with the problem?
Yes, so it's a great question. Our opioid crisis, I believe, is best understood as an epidemic of opioid addiction, meaning that the reason we're experiencing record high levels of opioid overdose deaths, the reason we're seeing heroin and fentanyl flood in and rising rates of neonatal abstinence syndrome and children in the foster care system, and the driver behind all of these health and social problems has been a very sharp increase in the number of Americans suffering from the condition of opioid addiction. And so bringing the opioid crisis under control requires preventing more people from getting addicted. But for the millions who are now addicted, we have to see that they can access a more effective treatment more easily. I think Massachusetts is actually doing a lot better than other states. Not that that's saying very much, but Massachusetts is one of the few states in the country where overdose deaths are trending in the right direction, despite having quite a bit of fentanyl here in Massachusetts. And I think that the reason we're seeing the trend move in the right direction is because Massachusetts does have better access to the most effective treatments for opioid addiction, which are opioid agonist treatments, for example, with medications like buprenorphine. that's easier to get here in Massachusetts than in other states. In many other states, the vast majority of the state-licensed drug and alcohol treatment programs are abstinence-based. They're staffed primarily with drug counselors. They don't really deliver health care, and they're not offering evidence-based treatment for opioid addiction.
Some say that the reason that the state is trending down is because of the availability of the overdose reversal drug Narcan, because more of that is in the market, and it's helping revive people after overdoses, and that's why we're seeing the numbers change. You're shaking your head.
No, I don't think that's the explanation. I think that across the country, we're doing very well with expanding access to naloxone. Naloxone is a very downstream intervention. When you rescue somebody with naloxone, if you don't treat their opioid addiction, you really just have to hope there's someone around with naloxone the next time they overdose. And so we certainly need to keep doing everything we can to make naloxone as widely available as possible. It should be everywhere. It should be in a Starbucks because there are people overdosing in the bathroom there. But I think overall, naloxone is probably making just a small dent in the problem. The more significant dent is if we can prevent more people from getting addicted through more cautious prescribing, and if we see that people who are addicted are accessing effective treatment.
Mm-hmm. And I think, Deb, on the point that Dr. Claudine just made about the cautious prescribing, we've also made a lot of progress in Massachusetts there. We began a program actually back in 2012 before the epidemic was as widely recognized as it is today, where we put certain restrictions and checklists for doctors and pharmacists to assure that patients weren't getting more medication than they needed, and in some cases weren't getting it at all. And as a result of those steps, we saw a dramatic drop, a 50% drop in so-called long-acting opioids and a 25% drop in short-acting, and an astounding 21 million fewer doses of opioid-based medications in the community over a several-year period. And so we have to keep working on the prevention. We have to keep working on the treatment. And then we have to work on some of the larger issues that we began with, which is trying to change public attitudes about substance use disorder more broadly, and really this idea of thinking about it as a chronic illness that people are genetically predisposed to, that tends to, they have it and they will likely to relapse, and that they need a combination of treatment that is, you know, has at its center medication-assisted treatment, as Dr. Claudine said. Those are the kind of the movements we have to make, and it's going to take, unfortunately, as Dr. Claudine said, a number of years.
Why did Blue Cross commission this poll, Andrew Dreyfus, and what do you want to do with these results?
Well, we commissioned the poll because we thought it would be helpful to have a better public understanding of where we are today in Massachusetts. We thought it would be good to establish a baseline so that we could measure it over time to hopefully show improvements. And we could use it to kind of start a more vigorous public conversation about just the issues we've been discussing today, how we define the issue, how people view the issue, some of the treatment options, and again, how we can bring treatment, prevention and treatment of substance use disorders really into the mainstream of medical care.
Are there concrete things that you will do as the major insurer in this state?
Yeah, well, we've been briefing government officials on these results, and both Governor Baker and Attorney General Healey have already been playing leadership roles on this issue, briefing the state legislature. We think this will be an important tool to educate both policymakers, leaders, and the public more broadly.
Andrew Kolodny, your main takeaway from this poll? I didn't ask you that.
That the United States is in the midst of the worst drug addiction epidemic in its history, and the people of Massachusetts are well aware of that.
Hmm. Okay. Andrew Kolodny, co-director of opioid policy research at Brandeis University, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Also, Andrew Dreyfus, CEO of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts, thanks to you as well.
Thank you very much.
And stay with us. Coming up, the latest on this blizzard of 2018. Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Well, more than 240,000 Massachusetts residents are without power right now as the snow piles up from what is officially a blizzard in some areas of Massachusetts. Governor Baker says he expects the outages will get even worse tonight.
So please charge devices now and make sure you have batteries on hand for flashlights and other household items.
The state officials say some 4,000 pieces of equipment are being used to try to clear the roadways. The T is running on a Saturday schedule. Some 800 flights have been canceled at Logan Airport. Coastal areas are being hard hit, not because of high tides this time, but because of strong winds and blowing, drifting snow that are creating near whiteout conditions. On Nantucket, winds of more than 60 miles per hour were recorded today. There's also strong winds reported in Falmouth. Down power lines are causing problems. And police in Yarmouth are urging people not just to stay off the roads, but to stay inside. On the line with us is Deputy Police Chief Stephen Zaros. Hi, Chief.
How are you?
So I'm okay. I'm dry. What's going on in Yarmouth?
Yeah, I wish we could say the same. I was listening to you. You nailed it. This is difficult here on Cape Cod. Yarmouth is in the mid-Cape, and we have most of our community right now without power, and power lines in the roadways. We have poles down. We have trees down. It's very treacherous.
So what's happening? Are you setting up shelters? What are you doing for
folks? Yes, and we do regional systems. There's 15 towns on the Cape, and we work together. So, you know, we have police officers and firefighters all doing their amazing work every day on the road, but you know, at the administrative level, we need to decide on sheltering because it looks like the power will be out a while, and the poor, you know, men and women that are working on the lines, it's too dangerous for them to actually rectify the matter right now. So shelters will be opening on Cape Cod.
But you don't know when, but you're in the process of doing that right now. Is that right?
Yeah, we do regional, like I said, planning and conference calls. So there's one at 4 o'clock, and it's likely that we'll announce at that point where the shelters are.
Now, you know, earlier today you sent out an email warning residents not to even go outside. Why is that?
It's just so dangerous. I was out there myself, and, of course, we're listening to all the calls. Not only could you crash because the roads are very slippery, this snow is so heavy and wet, it's hard to move. And not only is there the danger of crashing, but trees are coming down, poles are coming down, live wires are in the road. It is very dangerous.
All right. Well, when do you expect it might be safe?
That's a great question. You know, we're working with Eversource, but again, they're in tough times. It's very dangerous to, you know, go up on in the bucket truck and actually do something right now. They're waiting for the winds to die down, and they'll be on it as soon as they can. I expect, you know, a cold night, but we're here. All they have to do is give us a call or follow us on Facebook, and we'll get them to a shelter.
All right. Steve Zaros, Deputy Police Chief in Yarmouth, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome. Stay safe.
You too. We want to go north of Boston now. Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith is at the firehouse. Chief Smith, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, not a problem. Thanks for having me.
So tell us what it's like in Gloucester. Are you there, Chief? Hello, Chief. I think we lost you. That was Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith, who was with us. Again, we want to just recap now what we know about this storm. We've got about 240,000 people without power. We've also got crews out throughout the state, estimated anywhere between 3,500 and 4,000 pieces of equipment. Also, if you are taking public transportation, which is probably what you should be doing today, the T is on a reduced Saturday schedule today. I'm told that Deputy MBTA GM Jeff Gonneville is on the line to tell us about how the T is working. Thanks for being with us, Jeff.
Hi, how are you, Deb?
I'm okay, I guess. Reduced Saturday schedule. What does that mean for the MBTA?
Yeah, so what that means is on our red, orange, green, and blue lines, we are running approximately a couple minute longer spacing between trains. So, for instance, on the red line, we run about a 4 or 5 minutes minute distance between trains and the peak. Today we're running about 8 to 10 minutes between trains in the peak hours of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So and on our commuter rail, we're running what we refer to as our extremely reduced schedule. It is a schedule that is about 50% of the trains that we would run in a typical weekday. And really, for both the commuter rail and the Metro core system, the purpose of doing this is gives us the ability for all of our engineers, all of our motor persons to have the flexibility to run at reduced speeds because of the low visibility conditions that we know what we are experiencing, just like anyone that's out there driving an automobile or a motor vehicle right now. And in addition to that, it gives us the ability to run some of the snow fighting equipment that we have available to us now that we've purchased since the winter of 2015 out along the right-of-way to help clear, push, blow, and just move the snow from the right-of-way in order to continue for us to operate the system.
Have you had any issues today?
We have. So right now we're experiencing some power issues, both on the Plymouth and Kingston line, as well as on our Newburyport-Rockport line.
Does that mean you're out of power when you have a power issue?
Well, every grade crossing, every switch, every interlocking that we have across the entire commuter rail network, and to put that in perspective, it's about 400 miles of right-of-way, is and relies on civilian commercial power. So if there's a power outage in a particular area, we lose power on those particular pieces of equipment. So what that requires is we have to get out there with standby generators and generators to power those areas. So, again, right now on the Plymouth and Kingston line and on the Newburyport-Rockport line, we are experiencing some power issues. In addition to that, on our Providence line, where the Amtrak trains use overhead power to power the Amtrak trains, we do not use that overhead power, but the wires that power the trains, we have wire that is down right now on the Providence line that is requiring us to not be able to use one of the tracks there. So we're operating only on one track right now on the Providence line. So we're seeing some delays there as well.
So let's just recap. Saturday service, Mattapan trolley line being replaced with shuttle buses.
Correct.
Suspended ferry service all day.
Correct.
Regular bus service is expected today, but some lines are running on a so-called snow route.
That's correct. And pretty much I think what we've been messaging all day long is anyone who's going to be using our system, no matter what mode, should check before they leave to MBTA.com and get the latest service updates that we have for, again, whatever mode you'll be traveling or whatever line you'll be using.
It seems like quite a bit to take in here. Is this the worst one of the three storms so far?
I think each one of these storms has thrown a little bit something different at us, whether it was the heavy snow and winds and the mass power outages of the last storm or the floodings of the storms before that. So I think, you know, each one of these winter storms throws their challenges at us, but we've done a lot of work on planning to be more resilient and put together a very robust snow plans that offer various levels of response. And I think we've been executing to those plans but certainly I do not want to mislead anyone. We are all looking forward to spring.
All right. MBTA Deputy GM Jeff Conneville, thanks very much for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you.
Okay, for an overview of what's happening around the state, I'm told that Chris Bessie, who's a spokesperson for the Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency, is on the line. Hi, Chris. We're going to have to start paying you a salary.
Good afternoon. Here again. Another snow. As Jeff said, we're all ready for spring two here.
Are you? Okay, you're ready, but I don't think Mother Nature's ready.
Not quite yet.
Okay, what's the latest on outages?
So we've still got some pretty significant power outages across the state here, about 240,000 customers, particularly in the southeast part of the state. So Plymouth County out through Barnstable County on the Cape, Nantucket, Martha's Vineyard, who in that area of the state's really seen the most significant heavy wet snowfall and the strongest wind. So there's a it's going to be a process as that restoration starts, into tomorrow.
Last number we heard was about 240,000?
That's right. It's been hovering around there for a while now. It spiked up significantly this morning, but it's been around 240 for a little while now.
Problems with crews getting to be able to restore the lines. We're hearing about we've been speaking with lots of folks throughout the state throughout this hour, and we're hearing that a real problem is they don't even know if the crews can get out to safely try to work on restoring the power. Are you hearing about that, Chris?
Yeah, so that's the information we're getting from the utilities is that the first step is that they really have to wait till the conditions are safe. so that their workers are in a safe spot to be able to get out and get up there and get into the bucket trucks. And there's still going to be strong winds tonight and even some into tomorrow. So that's even before any of the work can get started. And then they go through their damage assessment process and figuring out what the damage is and then start the restoration effort. So, you know, people who are without power now are probably not going to have power back on tonight. So we encourage them, if they're in a cold home, that they stay with friends or families or find a local shelter or a hotel or any option to stay safe.
Are you opening shelters or warming centers, Chris?
There are some shelters already open, and we're working with cities and towns to support a few more. So as of right now, I believe the few that are open are there's one in Fall River, there's one in Plymouth, in Plimpton, in Nantucket, Fairhaven, Carver, Rochester. So there's several open. There's maybe some more opening up this evening if necessary on the Cape. So people can check with their local officials or call 211, the state's information hotline, for any updated shelter information.
Okay, so you're saying you don't have power now. You're probably not going to get it tonight. How about any idea when?
I don't yet. But again, knowing that those strong winds are going to continue into tomorrow, you know, it's probably going to be a multi-day effort for many of those people without power.
Mm-hmm. So would you say then that probably the morning commute tomorrow is going to be a real problem?
So there's a couple different impacts on the commute. You know, the snow itself should be wound down by the morning commute. And if, crews will be out there throughout the night tonight, that should be able to make good progress on a lot of those roads, at least the major roads. You know, there may be some side roads or small streets that cities and towns are still working through. But overall, the state's out there. They've got several thousand pieces of equipment out there, so they should make a good progress on that. But and the power outages affect commuting sometimes in terms of traffic lights and stuff like that. But overall, you know, the major highways and stuff will be going on. And I know you just got an update from the MBTA that they'll have some adjustments to their normal schedule as well.
Okay, Chris Bessie, spokesperson for the Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Stay safe.
You too. I just want to check in briefly here on the North Shore, because I'm told we have Eric Smith, who's the fire chief in Gloucester, back on the line with us. We lost him earlier in the show. Chief Smith, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, not a problem. I appreciate it, Deb. Thank you.
So what's it like in Gloucester?
Actually, we're starting to see the wind start to kind of taper down slightly. It's been pretty windy, as all the reports have indicated. We've had quite a few power outages due to the wind and its effect between the heavy snow and the trees and the wind itself. It's done exactly what we expected it to do, unfortunately. So we had a few spikes in outages, but we're hovering around 700 right now, which is actually pretty reasonable given the size of the community. So National Grid's been doing an excellent job working with both police and fire crews that are out chasing around these downed wires and getting those cleared up, so we at least maintain access for public safety. So that's kind of our priority, is to eliminate the hazard of the wire being downed where it can be, you know, in contact with people, and then obviously to de-energize that and open up those roadways so we still have public safety access to get to folks on both sides of that outage in case they have a need. So far the system is working well in that regard. We're looking forward, as it's been mentioned, to spring. I think we've all had enough of the March storm, so it's so we're just kind of hanging tight and waiting for this one to end.
Okay, well, Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith, thanks so much for being with us. Stay
Thank
warm.
You.
Okay, and so we've been talking a lot about power outages right now. The numbers are staggering, and utility providers say if you add up the number of people who've lost power in all three of the nor'easters we've had in the past 2 weeks, it's about 750,000 people. And our next guest says you don't have to settle for boxed or jarred food when the power goes out, but you can, in fact, make something to eat even when you don't have power. Kristen Quinn runs the blog Misadventures in Mommyhood, and she's on the line right now from Cohasset. Hi there, Kristen.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay, well, you're without power down there.
We are without power, yes.
Yeah, and your phone sounds awful. So we heard from Governor Baker that your area of the state is hard hit. So let's start with that. What's the storm like?
It's pretty bad down here. There's a lot of trees down. I think that's the issue with the power. A lot of heavy wood snow coming down, so it's kind of like a double whammy.
Oh, wow. And so we're talking food with you. So what are you making to eat when you have no power?
Oh, very little. But one of my kids' favorite recipes is very easy to make. It's snow ice cream. You just go outside with a bowl of food, pack up some ice cream, bring it back in, put a little vanilla, milk, and sugar, all things you should probably already have, and mix it together, and it's actually surprisingly delicious.
Okay, snow, milk, vanilla, sugar.
You got it. Yeah.
Okay. What's
if you want to get fancy, you can add some sprinkles.
Okay, and we have just a couple seconds. Second sure. recipe.
Yep, so these are energy bites, and you should have all of these in your pantry. It's peanut butter, coconut, and oatmeal, and you just round them together in balls. If you have chocolate chips, you can add those, and it's kids have a lot of fun making them. They're going to give you some good energy for this food day.
Okay, peanut butter, coconut, oatmeal, chocolate chips. Sounds good. Kristen Quinn runs the blog Miss Adventures in Mommyhood. Kristen, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Our show is produced by Jamie Bologna and Allison Brusek, with help from Cassandra Sunt, Lily Tyson, and Zoe Mitchell. Tim Skog is our technical director. We had help today from Renee Marchando. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hetty. I'm Deborah Becker. Stay warm. This is Radio Boston.